When we'd forget to turn on the machine, when Aiken Roshi would give Teisho sometime, after we'd tell him and he'd do sort of a gasp, you'd see him during one of the breaks, sitting there in his regular Teisho seat, looking at the altar with a stick of incense burning. And he'd be giving his Teisho over again to an empty room as we were all sleeping or going about our jobs. But I'll catch up on this one another day when session is over. So just before leaving his teacher, Tung Shan asked, "If after many years someone should ask if I am able to portray the master's likeness, how should I respond?" After remaining quiet for a while, Yun Yan said, "Just this." Tung Shan was lost in thought. Yun Yan said, "Having assumed the burden of this great matter, you must be very cautious." Tung Shan remained dubious about what Yun Yan had said. Later, as he was crossing a river, he saw his reflected image and experienced a great awakening to the meaning of the previous exchange. He composed the following gatha: "Earnestly avoid seeking without, lest it recede far from you. Today I am walking alone, yet everywhere I meet him. He is now no other than myself, but I am not now him. It must be understood in this way in order to merge with suchness." When we had the Diamond Sangha's teacher circle meeting in Seattle last year, I wrote to Roshi, already knowing that he was too frail to make such a journey, and invited him to attend. He wrote back and said, "I will be there, but you won't see me." Thus Tung Shan's gatha echoes through the ages and continues teaching to this very day. We sit through the night and the crack of dawn opens. This is the gap, slight though it may be, between sleep and wakefulness, between the conscious and unconscious, between reality and dream. It is the crack between I am and I am not, neither perspective quite right, neither quite accurate. It is the crack between all proposed dualities. We sit in our nighttime zazen, poised, upright, absorbed in mu, absorbed in each sound, in each taste, in each smell. Each thing is mu. The killdeer calls mu. The gull screams mu. The breath or the sigh from the person next to you is mu. Wu Man says that in such an evening, you are like a mute person who has had a dream. You are no longer self-centered. You are closer to the truth. You are multi-centered. Alive and utterly ignorant, you no longer know who you are or what you are. Be encouraged. The dawn nears and you will be caught asleep. So be encouraged. Without quite understanding the language yet, we are trying to read love letters sent by the mountains and rivers, by the trees and bushes, by the gulls and loons. You love and are loved, but the medium to express it and receive it is still confused. It is like falling in love for the first time, although you wouldn't know it as that, or call it so, even if you did. How do you approach her as a six-year-old boy by being a rascal and receiving attention with an apple or a drawing or with silence, hoping beyond hope. I do not still know what is best for the young boy, but what is best for the Zen student is to wait, to be patient, to be quiet, for to say something would inevitably be to say the wrong thing, and to act would be inevitably to act inappropriately. That is why a sangha and a teacher and a sitting practice are so important. You can then tolerate, you can then hold the energy and be still and be stilled. You then can realize your own ancientness, which is the very same ancientness of the mirror. So right here, I'd like to back up a moment and look again at Tung Shan's, an old woman oversleeping at daybreak, encounters the ancient mirror. William Powell translates this as the old crone. In one modern commentary, Tung Shan was called an ageist and sexist. It is striking that Tung Shan would call forth a female. This is the 9th century, after all, and from our perspective, things were certainly sexist. Akin Roshi says several terms in Chinese can be translated old woman, and this one implies a muddlehead. Tung Shan is here taking an ordinary sexist metaphor of his time and using it to present the feminine talent of both women and men to forget the self. And as I said, Powell calls her an old crone. At its root, crone means carrion, which is a withered and dried out flesh or meat. I am sure this was used as a sexist, ageist term back those many centuries ago. But Tung Shan might be making another point here. He might be pointing to a particular state of mind, the state of the mind of poverty, the mind of nothing at all, the mind of everything dropped away, even the bone. The mind of the ocean seal samadhi. This might be what he's pointing to when he calls forth the crone. Nothing for the crone that is left is of value. Adornments, makeup, perfume, sex, money, power, all these are useless to a dried up piece of meat. And this too is an encouragement right here. Each one of us here needs to make ourselves worthless. Let everything drop away. Anything of value to fall away just for a moment so that you can completely forget yourself. And then you too are the ancient old woman looking at the ancient mirror, thus echoing the mind and heart of the ancient crone. I won't say more about the word crone, but I would like to acknowledge that many women past childbearing age are taking on that title, crone, giving it flesh, giving it bone, and giving it power. It currently is beginning to be reborn as a description of wisdom, strength, power, and spiritual maturity. And I am happy for that. We're beginning to recognize the crone's innate value, direction, and worth to our culture and to our planet's future. Now this word old, the old crone or old woman encounters the ancient mirror. We could say the ancient woman encounters the old mirror, and the meaning would be the same. The ancient, finally waking up to itself, encounters the ancient. This mode, this practice, is not about one thing meeting another thing and being transformed. This is about meeting ourselves as ourselves. Lin Chi said, here, in this lump of red flesh, is a true man with no rank. Constantly he goes in and out of the gates of your face. If there are any of you who don't know this for a fact, then look, look. If any of you who don't know this for a fact, then listen, listen. And this master of seeing and hearing has no age, so we call her ancient. Elder Ting asked Lin Chi, what is the true man of no rank? Lin Chi came down from his seat, grabbed the Elder Ting by the lapels of his robe, shook him, slapped him, and pushed him away. Elder Ting just stood there. A monk called out from the assembly, Elder Ting, why don't you bow? When Elder Ting bowed, he had a great awakening. But do not think Elder Ting got anything, for in fact he lost something. He lost his self-centeredness. He lost his preoccupations. He lost his own sense of exclusivity, thus allowing all of us, the bell, the walls and tile, the trees and bushes, you and me, to wake up in that moment, to wake up in this moment. And after this awakening, Tung Shan warns Elder Ting and us to not wander in your head and validate shadows anymore. Elder Ting's practice did not end with his bow. It really just began. A natural transition from night to daylight. With Aiken Roshi, when you enter the Zendo for the first time, he'd say, and now your practice begins. Then, some months later, when you take up the first koan, he'd say, and now your practice begins. He said this at each transition when going through the first gate. With leadership for the first time in the Zendo, with completing formal koan work and so on. And this is true even when you have been daydreaming and you come back to Mu as though for the first time. This is true even when you come back to the gull's scream or the eagle's yell. Now, right now, your practice begins. Wherever you are, whenever you are, now, your practice, the practice of being confirmed and then saving all beings, it begins right now. Okay, thank you.